An extensive military fort guarded the entrance to the necropolis that housed the royal tombs. Each one comprised a subterranean complex of chambers that had been excavated from the solid rock. At the centre was the burial chamber in which stood the magnificent royal sarcophagus containing the mummified body of a pharaoh. Laid out around this chamber were the storerooms and depositories crammed with the greatest mass of treasure the world had ever known. It aroused the greed of every thief and grave robber in the two kingdoms, and in countries beyond their borders. They were persistent and cunning in their efforts to break into the sacred enclosure. Keeping them out required the perpetual vigilance of a small army. Taita left his escort beside the well in the central courtyard of the fort to water the horses and refresh themselves, while he continued into the burial ground on foot. He knew the way to the tomb of Queen Lostris, as well he might. He had designed its layout and supervised its excavation. Lostris was the only one of all the queens of Egypt to be interred in this section of the cemetery, which was usually reserved for reigning pharaohs. Taita had inveigled her eldest son into granting this dispensation when he had succeeded to the throne. He passed the site where the tomb of Pharaoh Nefertiti was being excavated, in anticipation of his departure from this world, and his ascension to the next. It was thronged with stonemasons driving the main entrance passage into the rock. The rubble was carried out by chains of workers in baskets balanced on their heads. They were coated thickly with the flowery white dust that hung in the air. Small group of architects and slave masters stood on the heights above, looking down on the furious activity below. The valley echoed to the ring of chisels, adzes, and picks on the rock. Unobtrusively, Taita made his way up the funereal path until the valley narrowed and branched into two separate gullies. He took the left-hand fork. Within 50 paces he had turned a corner, and the entrance to Lostris's tomb lay directly ahead, set into the cliff face. The entrance was surrounded by impressive granite pillars and sealed with a wall of stone blocks, which had been plastered over, then decorated with a beautifully painted mural. Scenes from the queen's life were arranged round her cartouche. Lostris, in domestic bliss with her husband and children, driving her chariot, fishing in the waters of the Nile, hunting the gazelle and the water birds, commanding her armies against the hordes of Hyksos invaders, leading her people in a flotilla of ships down the cataracts of the Nile, and bringing them home out of exile after the final defeat of the Hyksos. It was 70 years since Taita had painted these scenes with his own hand, but the colours were still fresh. Another mourner stood at the entrance to the tomb, swathed from head to ankle, in the black robes of a priestess of the goddess Isis. She knelt quietly in an attitude of adoration facing the mural. Taita resigned himself to the delay. He turned aside and settled down to wait in the shade at the foot of the cliff. The face of Lostris in the paintings set in train a series of happy memories. It was quiet in this part of the valley. The rock walls muffled the din made by the workmen lower down. For a while he forgot the presence of the priestess at the tomb. But then she came to her feet, and his attention switched back to her. Her back was still towards him when she reached into the sleeve of her robe and brought out a small metal tool, perhaps a chisel or a knife. Then she stood on tiptoe and, to Taita's horror, tore deliberately at the mural with the point of the tool. "What are you doing, you madwoman?" he shouted. "That is a royal tomb you are defacing. Stop at once!" It was as if he had not spoken. She ignored him and hacked at the face of Lostris with quick slashes of the knife. The underlying white plaster showed through the deep scoring. Taita sprang to his feet, still yelling, "Stop! Hear me? Your reverend mother will learn of this. I shall see that you are punished as harshly as you deserve for the sacrilege. You are calling down on yourself the wrath of the goddess." Still disdaining to glance in his direction, the priestess left the entrance and, with a deliberate, unhurried gait, started up the valley away from him. Beside himself with fury, Taita ran after her. He was no longer shouting, but he hefted his heavy staff in his right hand. He was determined to prevent her escaping the consequences of her actions, and violence clouded his mind. At that moment he would have struck her across the back of the head, crushing her skull. The priestess reached the point where the valley turned sharply. She stopped and looked back at him over her shoulder. Her face and hair were almost completely shrouded in a red shawl, and only her eyes showed. Taita's fury and frustration fell away, replaced by awe and wonder. The woman's gaze was level and serene, her eyes those of the portrait of the queen on the gateway to her tomb. For a moment he could neither move nor speak. When he found his voice again, it was a husky croak. "It is you." Her eyes glowed with a radiance that lit his heart, and although her mouth was covered by the scarf, he knew she was smiling at him. She made no reply to his exclamation, but nodded, then turned away and walked unhurriedly round the corner of the rock wall. "No!" he cried wildly. "You cannot leave me like this! Wait! Wait for me!" He dashed after her and reached the corner only seconds after she had disappeared, still reaching out to her. Then he stopped, and his hand dropped to his side as the upper end of the valley opened to him. 50 yards from where he stood it came to a dead end, blocked by a sheer wall of grey rock, too steep for even a wild goat to scale. She had vanished. "Lostris, forgive me for rejecting you. Come back to me, my darling." The silence of the mountains settled over him. With an effort he gathered himself, and wasting no more time in vain appeals, began to search for a crevice in the walls in which she might be hidden, or a concealed exit from the valley. He found none. He looked back the way he had come and saw that the floor of the valley was covered with a thin layer of white sand that had been eroded from the rock. His own footprints were clearly defined, but there were no others. She had left no mark. Wearily, he turned back towards her tomb. He stood in front of the entrance and looked up at the inscription she had cut into the plaster in hieratic script. "Six fingers point the way," he read aloud. It made no sense. What did she mean by the way? Was it a road? Or was it a manner or method? Six fingers? Were they pointing in a number of different directions or in one? Were there six separate signposts to follow? He was baffled. Again he read aloud the inscription. "Six fingers point the way." As he spoke, the letters she had cut into the plaster began to heal and faded before his eyes. The portrait of Lostris was undamaged. Each detail was perfectly restored. In wonderment, he reached up to run his hands over it. The surface was smooth and unblemished. He stood back and studied it. Was the smile still exactly as he had painted it, or had it changed subtly? Was it tender or mocking? Was it candid, or had it become enigmatic? Was it benign, or was it now touched with malice? He could not be certain. "Are you Lostris, or some wicked wraith sent to torment me?" he asked it. "Would Lostris be so cruel? Are you offering help and guidance, or laying snares and pitfalls in my path?" At last he turned away and went down to the fort where the escort waited for him. They mounted and set out on the return journey to Thebes.